Music Session number 10469, Reel 3.
Brigadier Cree, Reel 3.
We march back to our former area on the west side of the range, where the 5th Division was developing its attack on the tunnels, the Razabil tunnels. That's 161 Brigade and 123 Brigade. 123 Brigade had opened the Ngoki Dok Pass, and 161 Brigade were engaged with the Japanese in the Razabil tunnels area. And we had the job of supporting them. We had to hold some low foothills in that same place where C Company had been beaten up so badly before while that was going on. And then all of a sudden the order came that we were to 5th in 7th Divisions were to be flown out from the Arakan to go and reinforce the Imphal sector, where the Japanese advance had begun and was progressing all too fast.
When approximately was this?
This was, I think it was March, early March 1944. So back we went to a place called Dohazari, and there we were emplaned in American owned and driven Dakotas. We were emplaned together with our mules and our jeep transport. The rest of our mechanical transport, that was all the 1500 weight trucks and 3-ton lorries and so on, were formed into a convoy to go round by road, ostensibly to rejoin us at Imphal. We didn't see them again for the next 3 months. We were emplaned with our jeeps and mules on these Dakotas, but for some reason which I had never discovered, we were landed at Manipur Road, which is the railhead, was the railhead for the Kohima Imphal front. Instead of being flown right down to Imphal, we were landed at Manipur Road, and I was met there by staff officers from the sub-area, the lines of communication sub-area headquarters there, and told to collect all our a lot of new vehicles, you see. I said, but we haven't got any drivers, they're all driving our own vehicles round by road. He said, nevertheless, you've still got to take them over. So we were able to produce the necessary drivers from our own rank and file. Luckily, there were quite enough men able to drive. So we were fitted out with a whole new lot of 1500 weight trucks, new ones, very nice 1500 weight trucks, mostly fitted with winches, the latest thing. And we were then told to move out 10 miles out of Manipur Road to a place at Milestone 10 and go into camp there and await orders. So we did that. It was just my battalion. The Jats had not... I think the Jats and the Punjab had gone straight on to Imphal, as we should have done. It was only us who had landed at Manipur Road. And the next morning I received orders to move forward into Kohima, about 30 to 40 miles up the road. Well, we did that and got to Kohima, where I met Colonel Richards, the garrison commander, whom I knew because he had been in my regiment. And we made plans together to assist him in defending Kohima, which was had no regular troops in it at all. It had a convalescent depot, and the soldiers had been armed and formed into some kind of military formation, and there was a battalion of the Nepalese army, the Maharaja of Nepal's state forces, but we were the only regular army troops there, and we made plans to hold Imphal, hold Kohima help to Hiroshima. And at that moment, the area commander of the 404 lines of communication area came in and said, "Oh no, I don't want him to do that at all." He said, "I want West Yorks to go back down the road to Manipur Road and hold it in a series of company detachments down this Manipur Road, you see." So off we went back into our trucks and down this road again. It dawned on me that this was a most extremely foolish thing to do. He couldn't really have meant that. But for one thing, the road was absolutely jam-packed with vehicles trying to get out of Kohima and others trying to get in. The most appalling traffic jam. And if I had split up the battalion into four detachments over 40 miles of road, I'd have had no control over them at all and couldn't have affected the battle in any way at all, and probably would have been mopped up in detail. So I didn't. I disobeyed the order, I'm sorry to say. And we went back to the place we'd been to the night before, to Milestone 10, and settled down for the night there. We found there some elements of the Burma Regiment, which was a regiment formed after the retreat from Burma out of elements of the Burma Army who were actually Indians. They weren't Burmese, they were Punjabis and such like. And we got in touch with them and settled down for the night. And suddenly the general appeared. And I thought, well, now I'm for it, for disobeying orders. However, he didn't mind at all. I explained to him what I felt about it, and he quite agreed, and said, "Right, well, tomorrow go back to Kohima, you see, and help to defend Kohima." So back we went to Kohima the next day and took up positions round about the place and had to send one company forwards, quite a long way forward, to back up the Jessamy position. There was a place called Jessamy outside Kohima, which was held by a battalion of the Assam Regiment, and we were to go and act a sort of long stop to them. I couldn't see much point in it, really, but anyway, that's what we had to do. And we sent C Company and the carrier platoon went out there, and the rest of us took up positions in Kohima and prepared for a long siege. Battalion headquarters was in an old hospital, former hospital, and I occupied the matron's quarters. It was our battalion headquarters. We found a harmonium there, which was greatly pleased our padre, who could play it, and we lifted the harmonium, and it accompanied us for all the rest of the war. It was very useful for divine services. Anyway, after about two or three days of this, orders came that the West Yorks were to move forward to Imphal. Vehicles, transport was being sent for them. So Colonel Richards was rather dismayed about this. It left him absolutely naked again, without anybody to defend him, except these odds and sods of the convalescent depot and so on. Anyway, I couldn't have been more pleased. And the vehicles arrived, and we piled onto them and went off down the road to Imphal like scalded cats. And we were, in fact, the last people to get through. The Japs were closing in all round. I remember passing some military policemen on this road to Imphal, and I said, "What are you doing here?" And they said, "Oh, we're directing traffic." And I said, "How long are you staying?" They said, "Oh, we've got to stay till we're told to come out of it." And I never knew what happened to them, but I fancy they must have been captured. Well, we got into Imphal and were put into a position on the western side of Imphal on the Ukhrul Road.
Which?
Ukhrul. U-K-H-R-U-L. On the Ukhrul Road, which led out of Imphal to the west. And we stayed there and thereabouts for some considerable time, holding various positions.
Can you describe the terrain round about there?
Yes. Well, Imphal, there's a plain, there's a big plain, the valley of the river, and it is commanded on all sides by quite high hills. And it was absolutely essential that these hills should not fall into Japanese hands, because it was vital that we should hold this airfield, you see. We were supplied by the air entirely, and aircraft could land on this field, the heavy transport craft, the Dakotas and so on, and so we could continue to get supplies and personnel into Imphal right the way through. And we had to hold these hills. On the western side of Imphal, the hills are, the mountains are extremely steep and precipitous and really impossible, and nobody attempted to make use of them. The Japs never came round that way, and we never attempted to hold them. They were just ignored. But down the other side of Imphal, overlooking this plain where the airfield was, there was a sort of massive hills, and we had to hold those and make sure the Japs didn't capture them. Then back along the road towards Kohima, there was a place called Kangla Tongbe, which was an enormous dump of stores, rather like the admin box, ordnance field park, empty workshops, all that sort of thing, and an absolute mass of Indian followers, non-combatant followers. Well, these people, the Japs were starting to attack this place and causing severe jitters amongst this heterogeneous garrison of odds and sods and just a very few regular soldiers. The only troops they had were the Assam Rifles. They had a company, I think, of the Assam Rifles helping to defend the place. And I was told that we were to go there and assist the garrison to defend it by day, but were not to remain by night or get too much involved. And by night we had to withdraw back into the Imphal perimeter. So we did that for a day or two, and there was quite a lot of fighting round the edge of this Kangla Tongbe.
Can you describe it?
Beg pardon?
Can you describe that fighting?
The Japs were pressing in close and shooting. Our people were replying and trying to keep their fire down. But I got back there the next morning or two mornings later, and I thought that they were in a very jittery state, our garrison. I didn't think they could take any more. They had all night long, they had this jittering going on of Japs attacking and firing at them. So I sent a message to brigade headquarters that I said the situation at the moment is fairly all right, but I don't believe the garrison could withstand another night in this place, and I recommend that they be withdrawn. So I got an answer back saying, okay, and you will supervise it. You can withdraw them today, but under your supervision. So I had to make the plan to withdraw all this huge mob of people. And I divided it up into sectors, the admin, the Kangla Tongbe base, and I put one company of mine in charge of each sector. And luckily we had artillery at call. And we started withdrawing straight away, thinning out, getting lorries out with personnel and whatever goods they could salvage, and we were thinning out quite reasonably well. Every now and again we'd fire a salvo from the guns, keep the Japs quiet, and it was going quite well without too much interference, and we were just getting out onto the road leading to Imphal. Mobs and mobs of these Indian followers. I was trying to get them off the road onto the paddy field, away from the road, where they would have been safer if they'd been more dispersed. They didn't want to do it at all. They didn't like leaving the road. They were scared. However, we sort of pushed them off and managed to sort of make our way down this road, when all of a sudden we were attacked from the air. And we were attacked by our own side. The Indian Air Force attacked us. They had mistaken Kanglatombe for another place 10 miles further up the road called Kangpopke. They were supposed to have attacked Kangpopke, but they attacked Kanglatombe instead.
How do you spell Kangpopke?
Kangpopi. Kangpopki. Kangpopke. Where the Japs were in some force. Well, these are they were bombers. They flew up and down, machine gunning us mercilessly. Quite a lot of people were hit. I was walking along beside an armoured OP truck belonging to the gunners. Okay, now. A man sitting in this truck was killed by a shot from an aeroplane. He was right next door to me. Luckily, I escaped all right. Eventually, this chap flew off, and we rescued a lot of cartridge cases that had fallen out of his aeroplane while he was shooting at us, and we took those back for evidence. And I put in a complaint about this, and we produced these cartridge cases, and the matter was followed up, and I think the pilot was disciplined. Eventually we got back to our position in the admin box, in the Imphal position, and then we hung around there for some while. And then we started, the move northwards began to join up with the Imphal, the Kohima people who were trying to break out southwards. And we pushed forward up the road, and we attacked one Japanese position called Zebra. I know it was called Zebra for some reason. We attacked that quite successfully, and we were assisted by some tanks of an Indian regiment, the 16th Cavalry. And that went off very well, and we pushed on down the road until we came to a big roadblock, felled trees across the road. And we could not progress further than that. So we had to get into a sort of defensive position and try and work our way forward from there. One company, that was B Company, were sent well round to the left flank to try and push through that way, and they made good progress, and they had several scraps with the Japs up there, but we weren't able to make any progress on the main road. And I was told that I had to send a company around to get behind this Jap position, that it must be taken and we must push on. So I chose D Company to do this job, and I told them to work round, try and get round to the back of this Japanese roadblock position, and then we would attack it from our side and the Japs would go. Well, it was a bad plan that I made. I should have told them, D Company, to have gone due north for a mile or two to get well clear of this Japanese position, and then turn eastwards and get behind it. But instead of that, they went straight for it, and they walked right into the middle of it. They walked right into the middle of the Jap position, and we heard the firing break out. We heard sounds of heavy firing and Jap machine gun fire, unmistakable, and the sound of their rifle grenades and a lot of shooting. And D Company went off the air completely. We didn't know what the hell had happened, but feared the worst. And after a bit, some men got back. The company sergeant major of this company had got out with a few men and got his way back into our lines by crawling along a ditch beside the road. Company Sergeant Major Pask, his name was.
Pask. Pask?
P-A-S-K, yes. And he gave me the situation, which was that the whole company had been caught in this ambush, which was nothing less than an ambush. And the company commander and both the other officers had been killed, and plus a great number of men. Well, I was told that we'd got to capture this place the next day, come what may. So A Company were still intact. D Company, after this, was a write-off. B Company were out on the left flank. I can't remember what happened to C Company, but they were not very strong anyway. The next morning, we attacked with A Company, and we used all the mortars of our own battalion, plus the mortars of the Jungle Field Regiment, Royal Artillery, which had all been ranged by my company commander, Bishop, Victor Bishop, who was himself a mortar expert. He had arranged the whole lot, and we found the most colossal mortar barrel into this Jap position, which was in a chong. And the 3-inch mortar bombs falling into a chong do terrific execution, because they have a vertical angle of descent and they fall absolutely straight into it, and the effect of their explosion is confined by the sides of the chong, so they do terrible damage. After this, the troops advanced. They just walked absolutely straight through the position, just the odd shot or two from a Tommy gun, and they were through and out the other side. The Japs had gone. Most of them actually had stayed behind dead. And we were able then to join up with the troops from the Kohima who were working their way south.
This position was called Zebra, you say?
Zebra was before that. No, this was Milestone. I think it was Milestone 112. That's Milestones from Kohima to Imphal. It was Milestone 112 where we had this serious hold up. Zebra was all right. We got through that all right with the aid of the tanks, but we were badly held up at this Milestone 112 because it was a corner of the road, and there was a roadblock there which was covered by fire, and we were unable to do anything about it. Eventually we broke through there, and the Japs went. At the same time, on the other side of the road, the eastern side of the road, the Jarts, the 3rd 9th Jarts, were making an attack, and that was very successful. So the Japs were on the way out, and we met the troops from the Kohima. They were a Royal Armoured Corps regiment. It was the first to come through, and so Imphal was relieved. In the meanwhile, there'd been a big battle at a mountain called Nung Shi Gum, which was on the Ukraw side of the road, that is to the east of this place, what I'm talking about now. Nung Shi Gum was a tall feature which had been captured originally by the Jarts, but had been attacked and recaptured by the Japs, and 123 Brigade was ordered to recapture it with the tanks, and we were in support and would have had to have gone forward to reinforce this attack, or perhaps to help them to consolidate if they had been successful. And we were holding a position down at the foot of this mountain, and we could watch the entire battle going on. We could see the Japanese officer striding about, waving his sword and encouraging his men. Well, we had a platoon of machine guns, with the Vickers machine guns, under our command. And I, who had been a machine gun officer in my younger day, I thought, I'm going to like to have a go at these chaps. I laid the gun myself and turned all the other three guns onto it, and we fired a terrific blast at these Japanese that we could see walking about. It was quite long range, but it seemed to have the desired effect, and they went there afterwards. They disappeared. And the attack was on the hill was made by the Dogras, an Indian regiment in 123 Brigade. And we could see this going on, and they actually brought two tanks right up the hill, up the mountainside. It had never been done before. It was very steep. It was thought to be impossible, but they did it.
With the ropes?
It worked, yes. They eventually got to the top. I think there were only two tanks and about one platoon of the Dogras left. But they worked it, and the Japs went, and the hill was recaptured. It was the first time that they'd ever used the tank so boldly and made them go up these great mountains. It was thought to be impossible before. I don't think it did the tanks much good. Nevertheless, it worked. The Japs wouldn't stay for it. They'd cleared out.
Did they have to winch them up?
No, they got themselves up under their own steam. Tremendous strain on the gears, I think, and clutches. Nevertheless, one tank did topple over and fall down the edge, but I think two got through. It may have only been one. Anyway, enough to turn the tide in our favour. And one platoon of Dogras under an Indian officer. All the others had been done in. And one platoon of Dogras under a Jemadar, I think. And a troop of tanks under a sergeant were the ones who finally got the. Well, when Imphal was relieved, we thought, well, perhaps now we shall have a rest. We were moved back into what had been a hospital, field hospital in Imphal. Nice buildings, bamboo huts everywhere, all quite comfortable and nice. And we had a bit of a rest there, and then we heard that we weren't going to have a rest at all. The other divisions were going to be pulled out, but the 5th Indian Division was to continue the pursuit of the Japs down the Tidim Road.
Tidim?
Tidim. T-I-D-D-I-M, down the Tidim Road. So we got ready for battle again. And we set off and started moving south from Imphal. We had to sort of clear the area a bit as we went. There were still a few Japs lurking about. But we got them out of the light and got, I should think, about 30 miles down the road when we...